6 message, looking at verses 1 and 2. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Again, this is the practical application of the doctrinal that was set forth in chapters 1 through 11. The primary doctrine that was set forth was salvation by grace, the summation of which is found in verse 1 of our text in the phrase, the mercies of God. And it is this, the mercies of God, that becomes the basis, the reason, the grounds, the foundation of what Paul is pleading for here in these two verses. Again, he's pleading with the called of Jesus Christ, the beloved of God, the called to be saints, the very recipients of the mercies of God. And he's calling them to live a life rooted in the mercies of God. In other words, a life that has salvation, has its basis. And that's the only way the Christian life can truly be lived. Is salvation, real salvation, must be its basis. Now he mentions three specific duties regarding this life that has its root in the mercies of God. Presenting your bodies a living sacrifice is the first one. The second one is, be not conformed to this world. And the third is, be ye transformed, which is the alternative to be not conformed. It is of extreme importance that we grasp, that we understand, that we practice what is being said in these three duties. We cannot afford to fail to see the significance of them, or the magnitude of what is being taught here. And our great need is for the mercies of God and that which follows that in our text to press upon our hearts, making a profound impact upon our lives. In this message, we want to focus on the second of these three duties. Be not conformed to this world. Our subject is a life of nonconformity to the world. First of all, consider the three duties of the life that we're called to live and how they relate to one another. Again, reading the text, there are specific duties that you and I, the saved, are called to be and to do. And what many, including many Baptist preachers, fail to realize is that the doing stems from the being. We have to be something before we can do. And a failure to misunderstand that means that the emphasis is misplaced. You can say the right thing, but the emphasis is in the wrong place. And that leads to disastrous results. And these duties, again, all have their basis in the mercies of God, us being the recipients of the mercies of God. The first duty is present your bodies a living sacrifice. as we've already seen, were to be a sacrifice to God in life. And as we've seen in previous message, this involves, first of all, the realization and the acknowledgement that God has all rights and all claims upon our life. If we do not come to that realization, if we do not come to that acknowledgement, we will not present our bodies a living sacrifice. And the reason people do, I'm talking about the saved, do not present their bodies a living sacrifice is because they have not been convinced in their heart that God has all rights and claim upon their life. We see the result of this realization means that we give up, we relinquish, we renounce all rights and all claims to our own life, which results in a yielding and committing and dedicating and submitting our entire being to God. It consists of placing ourselves at the absolute disposal of God. Again, you're not going to do that until you acknowledge that God has every right over every aspect, every area of your life. So it is a complete and entire resignation of ourselves and all that we have to the Lord. And that's foundational. Amen. It's foundational to what follows here in verses 1 and 2. Again, present your bodies a living sacrifice. If that is not done, then what follows becomes a works-based religion. If we do not truly present ourselves, then let's say we get to the second step and we're trying not to be conformed, but it's works-based. It's works-based because we have not presented ourselves. And works-based religion always results in Pharisaism all the time. And the Lord's churches today are absolutely saturated with Pharisaism. I mean, I could give many, many, many examples showing that that is true, but that's not my point. But what follows this presenting is be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed. And that is linked to, both of those are linked to and dependent upon, present your bodies a living sacrifice. If you try not to be conformed and try to be transformed without presenting yourself, you are going to live a very frustrating life, and you are going to become very judgmental because you'll have your own list. But each of these, notice, is a continual and ongoing state of being. That is this. Each one of them, the presenting, the not being conformed and being transformed, and each one is unto God. Now notice in verse 2, the word be, which is a verb, is twice used, and it's singular, present tense, stating a continued state of being. So be not conformed is not a doing, it is a state of being. Be ye transformed is not just an act, it is a state of being. And it goes back to presenting your bodies a living sacrifice. So let's consider the danger that is to be avoided. We see here in verse 2, be not, present tense, you can read that as be not being. Be not being conformed, shaped, molded. Two, of course, is a preposition indicating direction. It's moving toward something. Next, you have an adjective, this. And it's an adjective referring to something very specific. When you say this, this microphone, this flower, you're talking about something very specific. So he says, be not being conformed to, in the direction of, this, referring to something very specific, and in this case, this, of course, an adjective, describes the noun being world. Be not being conformed to this world. So the object in which we are not to comply in the direction of is the world. That's very plain. That is very direct. That is very absolute. It demands the immediate attention of every child of God. Be not conformed to. That tells us immediately there is a threatening current. And it is a current that the masses of God's people have succumbed to. The majority of God's people are very much conformed to this world. To conform means to comply with. We are not to comply with the world. It means to adhere to. We are not to adhere to the world. It means to accept. You know, people say, well, that's the way it is. You might as well just accept it. Well, we're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to conform. We're not supposed to accept. It means to go along with. Well, once again, that's the way it is. You might as well just get used to it and go along with it. That's not what we're supposed to do as a child of God. It means not to fall in line with. We're not to fall in line with the world. We're not to yield to the world. We're not to surrender to the world. Be not conformed to the world. So we must understand what is meant in those words, this world. We have to understand that because that's what we're not to be conformed to, this world. Now, all through the Bible, specifically the New Testament, the world is used to represent a system of life. It's not talking about the planet, Earth, but it's talking about a system of life. And we are not to conform to that system of life. Jesus often spoke of the world as a system. He said in John 7, verse 7, though he came into the world, that would refer to the earth. But then he goes on and refers to it as a system. Me it hateth, because I testify of it, that its works are evil. The world system, ever since Adam fell in the garden, has hated Christ. The world system is evil. Has to be if it hates Christ. He said in Matthew 18, verse 7, woe unto the world because of offenses. I'm talking about the earth as a planet. I'm talking about the world as a system. It's full of that which is offensive to the Lord. Peter mentions in 2 Peter 2:20 the pollutions or the contaminations or the toxins of the world. Again, a system. 1 John 4, verse 3, John spoke of the spirit of Antichrist, which is in the world. Not the Antichrist that will be here in the tribulation period, but the spirit of Antichrist, the spirit of that which is opposed to Christ, the spirit of that which is against Christ, that which is the opposite of Christ, that which is rival to Jesus Christ, that which is unlike Christ, that which is militantly seeks to reverse and undo what Christ does. That's the spirit
of Antichrist, and the world saturated with the spirit of Antichrist. 1 John 5, verse 19, the whole world lieth in wickedness or vileness and depravity. So Paul fervently pleads, be not conformed to this world, to the world that is described in the verses that we just referred to. This world, it refers to an order. It refers to an arrangement of life. It is an order, it is an arrangement of life that is evil and that is satanically informed and satanically ruled. He says, be not conformed to this world. It is a kingdom. Jesus spoke of it as a kingdom. It is a kingdom of darkness. So again, Paul in the setting, Paul makes his plea, be not conformed to this world. And he makes that plea in the setting of God's mercy. We are the recipients of the saving grace of God. We have been transformed. We have been saved. Be not shaped. Do not fall in line with the world. Because the world is the pathway of the unsaved. It is the pathway of those who do not know God. It is the pathway of those who walk in darkness, in the darkness of their fallen state. It's the same thing we did before we were saved. Sadly, many of God's people, after they're saved, gradually conform back to the world, and that's why we have this command, be ye not being conformed to the world. It is life and activity has the result of the fall of Adam and Eve in the garden. It is the sum total of the thinking, the ideas, the philosophies, the values, the attitudes, the ambitions, the goals, the pursuits, the behaviors of those who are alienated from God. That's the world. Be not conformed to the world. It is the viewpoint of unsaved man. Anytime you hear the viewpoint of an unsaved individual, you need to realize that. His viewpoint may not be inaccurate. His viewpoint may not be erroneous. But keep in mind, you're talking about the viewpoint of an unsaved man. And somewhere along the line, it's going to fall apart. It is the viewpoint of a man without God and without Christ. And it's their viewpoint of God and man. And the viewpoint of man, the viewpoint of fallen man, he does have an erroneous view of God. And he does have an erroneous view of man. And if you're wrong on God, you're wrong on man, you don't have much to offer in the line of solutions to problems. It is the world view of unsaved humanity, estranged from God, darkened in their understanding and spiritually dead. Be not conformed to this world. That is a fervent plea. What Paul is saying is, do not allow yourself to be assimilated into the world's system. How do you prevent that from happening? Present your bodies a living sacrifice unto God. It's the only way. That has to be the foundation. It is, do not allow yourself to be drawn in by the system of the world. It's very easy. It's very easy to get sucked in. It's very easy to get drawn into the system of the world. That's why we have to always be presenting ourselves unto God. It is, do not allow yourself to be fashioned by the world. Do not allow yourself to be molded and governed by the system of the world. Do not be stamped with the world's stamp. This is what Paul is pleading for. Be not conformed to this world. Now, God warned Israel of this very thing. Notice in Leviticus chapter 18, verses 3 and 4. Leviticus 18, verses 3 and 4. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. That's just like saying, be not conformed. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Again, be not conformed. Neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. Be not conformed. Ye shall do my judgments. That's be ye transformed. And keep mine ordinances to walk therein. I am the Lord your God. That's the reason. The reason not to be conformed for Israel was, I am the Lord your God. Now that same reason applies to you and I, but we can add the mercies of God. We are the recipients of the mercies of God. Therefore, do not conform to the world. In Deuteronomy 12 and verse 30, he said, take heed to thyself that thou be not snared by following them. Talking about when they would get to the land of Canaan. Be not snared by following them. How many of God's people have fallen into a trap because they have followed the world? Because they followed the world's thought process. And they fall into a trap. And once they get in that trap, it's hard to get out. And many have fallen. Be not conformed to this world. So in our text here in Romans 12, there are two world views presented. The world and God. Two world views. You have to have one or the other. You do not fall in between. If you think you do, your worldview is the world. It's not God. So, these two, the world and God, are diametrically opposed. At every point, they are diametrically opposed. The current of the world since the fall has always been away from God. Not the God they've created in their imagination, but the God of the Bible. The current of the world is away from God. And the plea is, be not conformed to this world. That is, do not be moved away from the one who in grace and mercy saved your soul. The world in all of its wisdom does not know God. The world in all of its wisdom does not honor God, does not admire God, does not trust God, does not seek God. Be not conformed to the world's wisdom. I'm afraid many have in many different ways. The pull of the world is in the direction of the antithesis of the will of God. In 1 Corinthians 1 verse 20 we read, hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? The wisdom of this world is foolishness. Why? Because it's away from God. It moves away from God. True wisdom moves you closer to God. Anything that moves you away from God, I don't care if it's just a step,
is foolishness, is the way of the world. Verse 21 of 1 Corinthians 1 says, the world by wisdom, that is, by its own wisdom, knew not God. The world in all of its wisdom and all of its perceived understanding and all of its perceived knowledge knows not God. James 3, verse 15, it is said of the wisdom of the world that it's earthly. That it is, it's the spirit of the world. It goes on to say that it's sensual. That means it's carnal. It goes on to say it's devilish. That means it's demonic. So the ideas, the thoughts, the opinions, the views, the philosophies, the theories, the speculations, the hopes, the impulses, the aims, the aspirations of the world are secular in nature. And by that I mean they are worldly, they are profane. And we're not to be conformed to this world. We're not to be conformed to the image of this world. We're not to be conformed to the wisdom of this world. And again, do not be mistaken. Our nation, our society, our culture, and even religious culture is secular to the core. Be not conformed to the world. That those words, by the way, be not conformed to this world, is present imperative negative. It is simply a call to reject and avoid something. What are we to reject? We're to reject the world as a system. We're to avoid it. We're to avoid it. It is a call to say no to something. What are we to say no to? The world. It is a call to overcome something. We're to overcome the world. We're not to conform to the world. We as God's people are not to try to get our children to conform to the world. You say, well, it's just this one time. You're deceived. It's not just this one time. It won't be. Be not conformed to the world. No child of God upon earth is absolved or exempt from be not conformed to this world. Following that same thought process, John says in 1 John 2, verse 15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Now, 1 John 2, verses 15 through 17, I believe, have been misrepresented for, well, as long as I've been saved. The word love, love not the world. Love speaks of an attachment. If you love something, you have an attachment to it. It speaks of a devotion. Love, part of love is devotion to whatever is loved. It's a passion. It's a yearning for. So when it says love not the world, it is telling us we're not to be attached to the world, not to be devoted to the world. Our passion and our yearning is not to go in the direction of the world. That gives us further understanding of be not conformed to this world. To be not conformed is to love not the world. But he goes on in 1 John 2:15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. And many people have taken things and make it to be that which is material, cars, houses, boats, whatever you want to put in that category.
And because someone doesn't drive a nice car, and because someone doesn't own a boat, and because someone owns a smaller house than the next guy, they don't love the things of the world. That's nonsense. That's not what this is saying. Neither the things of the world. That speaks of the substance of the world. It speaks of the content of the world. But more than that, it speaks of the theme of the world. And the theme of the world is self. Love not the world. Be not conformed to the theme of the world. Be not conformed. The things of the world, again, refers to the world has a system. Those words, neither the things of the world, are the expression. They are the demonstration. They are the passion of the world spirit. The things of the world. The things of the world is the expression and the demonstration and the passion of a world that receives, again, its information from Satan. He's the prince of the world. The words, neither the things of the world, have reference to how the world goes about its business. We're not to be conformed to that. We're not to go about our business the same way the world does. We're not to be conformed. It's how the world operates. It's how the world functions. We're not to operate in the same way. People say, well, lying's fine in business. Cheating's fine in business. Everyone does it. You're not to be conformed. You're not to love the things of the world. It speaks of the priority. The things of the world speaks of the priorities of the world. There's nothing wrong if you can afford it. And it's not your God. There's nothing, most of us here, we have nice automobiles. There's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't make you worldly. It doesn't make you worldly if you have a nice house. But if you adapt to the world's priorities, now we're talking about something else. And that's what this is talking about. And it just makes me sick when people say, well, I'm not worldly because I just live in a 500 square foot house. Well, that doesn't mean you're not worldly. It means that it speaks of the interests. The things of the world speaks of the interests of the world. Again, you can like sports, you can enjoy certain activities and not be worldly. But when they become priority, you're worldly. And it doesn't matter what the activity is. It doesn't matter what the sport is. It refers to that which absorbs the attention. The things of the world is what absorbs the attention of the world. Our attention is not to be absorbed by the same things as the world. And look around at those who profess to be God's people. There's not much difference. There really isn't. It's that which absorbs the time. It is what the world system values. It's what the world system treasures. It's what the world as a system is driven by. That's what is meant by the things of the world. It's really explained in verse 16 of 1 John 2, for all that is in the world. Just right after the things of the world, for all that is in the world. For, there's a connection. For all that is in the world. And then he mentions three avenues. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Those are the motivating factors of the world system. That is the spring of action to those who are characterized by the world. So what characterizes the world is a people living in response to the lust of the flesh. Why did you do that? I wanted to. That's the lust of the flesh. Well, don't you see that was wrong? But I wanted to. That's the lust of the flesh. The lust of the eyes. Why did you do that? Because it looked good. That's the lust of the eyes. Why did you do that? It made me feel good. That's the pride of life. And that's how the world thinks. And we're not to be conformed to that. So it's a people living according to that which feeds the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. The world is governed and driven by those self-desires. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. That's what drives the passions of the world. So we see that from these three avenues, that the flesh, the eyes, and pride are the sources from which the people of the world draw from. And then it goes on in verse 16 and says, "For all that is in this world," again, he then mentions these three governing sources, and then he adds, "is not of the Father." It's not of the Father. That means it's against God. It's opposed to God. We're not to conform to that. The way of the world is people living not of the Father, but according to their own assessment. I did such and such because it seemed like the right thing to do. Did you seek God? Did you seek God's will? Well, no. That's what this is talking about. Just living according to our own assessment. Be not conformed to this world. Love not the world. We cannot be deceived concerning what is being said here. In Satan and man's own sinful heart have perpetrated the deception that worldliness is limited to certain behaviors. And people that believe that way, here's what they do. They make a list. Don't do this. If I do this, then I'm being worldly. And so on. The problem is, very few people have the same list. They become a law to themselves. And because I don't do this, and that's, it's not on my list, but it's on your list. Therefore, you're worldly. I'm not. That's Pharisaism. That's what leads to all the judgments. And it's ridiculous. Well, I don't believe that a preacher should wear a green shirt. I believe he should only wear a white shirt. Well, that may be your rule. But just because a preacher wears a green shirt doesn't make him worldly. But that's how I'm almost ready to say most people sitting in Baptist churches today think. They've become that Pharisaical. They've come up with their own list of rules. And they're so proud because they don't think that they're worldly. Now, lest I be misunderstood, let me say there is without a doubt worldliness is expressed, there is an important word, by choices, by speech, by dress, by places of entertainment. But at the core of all of that, it is something, worldliness is something internal. Worldliness is first a condition of heart. So what I'm saying is this. Worldly behaviors do not make you worldly. They reveal that you are worldly. When you do not dress modestly, and you do not dress like a man ought to dress and a woman ought to dress, that doesn't make you worldly. That shows that you are worldly. When you go to questionable places, that doesn't make you worldly. You're already worldly. That's why you go there. That's what needs to be emphasized. But instead, the outward is emphasized. And please, don't misunderstand me. The outward is important. It's an expression. But it's not what makes you. What you are is what causes you to do what you do. And that is, the emphasis is not placed there. And what that has done is created Pharisaism. And I believe there's probably more Pharisees today sitting in Baptist churches than there probably was in Christ's day. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. Because they have this misconception. I believe a woman ought to wear a dress. I believe a woman ought to wear a dress to her knees, past her knees. I believe it ought to be loose. I don't believe it ought to be tight. Same with men. I believe that clothing ought to be modest. But if you dress in an immodest way, that's not what makes you worldly. You're worldly. You dress that way because you are worldly. It's an internal problem. Take care of the internal problem, and that'll take care of itself. Be not conformed. So be not conformed is not limited to don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Do this, this, this. And it's true, we shouldn't do not do this and do this. But that's not what makes us worldly. It reveals that we are. It reveals that we are. So again, worldliness is an internal problem. If the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, if we live by the impulses of those things, we're guilty of conformity. We're guilty of worldliness. We are not to be driven by the flesh. We are not to be driven by pride. If we are, we are guilty of conformity and worldliness. You say, but I don't go to whatever. Therefore, I'm not worldly. But if you're driven by pride, you are worldly. The pride of life. But people make themselves feel good. I don't go to the movies. Therefore, I'm spiritual. And because you go to the movies, you're not. The emphasis is in the wrong place. It's what we're driven by. If we are driven by the flesh or pride, we're guilty of worldliness. If you are proud because you don't do something, you're worldly. You're worldly. Because part of being worldly is the pride of life. So we think worldliness is bad. I'm here to tell you it's worse than you think it is. There's more worldly people than you think. If the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life are the starting point of our actions, then we're guilty of conformity to the world. We're guilty of worldliness. If the source of our thinking, if the source of our ideas and philosophies and on we could go is the lust of the flesh, the pride of, and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, if these are our sources of dependence, then we're conformed to the world and we're worldly. Worldliness is to be influenced and driven by the workings of the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. So, in closing, these words, be not conformed to this world, love not the world, really need a personal examination. This is something that we as individuals must honestly face. Am I conformed or am I being conformed? None of us here are completely 100% conformed to the world. So that's not the issue. Are we being conformed? Are we in the process of conformity to the world? And that's something we must face. That's something we as individuals must answer. In other words, am I worldly? Am I worldly? That's more than, not lessening the importance, don't misunderstand me, that's more than, do I dress right? Do I go to proper places? That's more than that. It's all included, but it's something more. Because you can do everything right and still be worldly. Am I worldly? So how do we determine that? How can we determine? How can we answer that question? Am I worldly? Well, again, we have to be honest. It doesn't do any good to ask ourselves questions if we do not honestly answer them. What is it that forms my perspectives? What is it that forms my perspectives? Is it the world? Or is it the Lord? Because if it's the world, you're worldly. What is it that forms my thoughts? What is it that forms my attitudes? Is it the attitudes of the world? Or is it the attitudes of Christ? What is it that forms my reactions? Well, I have every right to react that way because they did such and such. That's the world. And if that's the way you think, you're worldly. So, what is it that forms my reactions and my behaviors? How do I look at God? How do I look at life? How do I look at self? How do I look at others? Why do I do what I do? Why do you go to church? We need to answer that question. Well, because if I don't, I'm afraid so-and-so will think something. That's worldly. That's the pride of life. Why do we sing? Why do we do any of the good things? Why do we do it? We need to ask ourselves that. Why am I doing this? Because you can be doing it for worldly reasons. You can do a spiritual thing for a worldly reason. That makes you worldly, by the way. What is our hope fixed upon? Is our hope fixed upon our retirement funds? If so, you're worldly. You're not worldly because you have retirement funds. You're worldly because that's where you've placed your hope. There's a big difference. Huge difference. Nothing wrong with having retirement funds, but if you place your whole hope in that, that's worldly thinking. To what are we anchored? What are we anchored? Well, I'm anchored to family. Family's important. But let me tell you something. If that's your anchor, you're worldly. Well, I would never move from there because all my family is there. Well, what if the Lord leads you? Well, my family's here. You see, you're anchored there. And you're not even open to God's will. That makes you worldly. Be not conformed to the world. What is most important? What is most valuable to me? And we can answer that question by how do we respond? You buy a brand new automobile. You go to Walmart. And you come out and there's a 3-foot-long scratch in the door. And you have a meltdown. Preacher preaches and you see that you have a spiritual problem, but there's no meltdown. I believe that qualifies as worldly. You have more of a reaction to a material thing than you do spiritual. But I don't go to the movies. And by the way, I don't. In case if you're wondering.
So therefore, I'm not worldly. Oh, don't let Satan, and he has deceived multitudes. There are some very worldly people who do the right things. Perhaps the best way we can answer, am I worldly, is by answering this question. What will I rearrange my life for? What is it? Grandchildren have a need. Oh, I'll rearrange my work schedule. I'll rearrange everything. Little granddaughter has a need. Bible conference time. Well, you don't expect me to take off work, do you? What are you willing to rearrange your schedule for? If you're more willing to rearrange it for the things of the world than you are the things of the Lord, you're worldly. Well, I'm in church every Sunday. That's not the issue right now. The question is, what are you willing to rearrange your life, rearrange your schedule for? It's become a huge problem in Baptist churches. And I say Baptist, I'm talking about churches like ours. Getting people to do anything because they're so busy. But they will drop whatever they're doing if a little granddaughter or a little grandson has a problem or has a program at school or whatever. That is worldliness. Call it whatever you like to make yourself feel better, but it's worldliness. And the command is, be not conformed to this world. Love not the world. It is a call to rise and live above that which is normal, that which is ordinary, that which is mainstream. What is mainstream today is just plain worldly, and we're not to be conformed. It is a call to be driven by love to God. That's what's to drive us. If it's the paycheck that drives us, that's worldliness. If it's what makes us feel good that drives us, that's worldliness. Whatever else you might do right doesn't undo that worldliness. Worldliness is a major problem. And 9 times out of 10, it's misidentified. What it really is. It's a call to be ruled by God. Be not conformed to this world is a call to be ruled by God. That's how we're to live our life. Why? Because He is our God. And because we are the recipients of the mercies of God. Therefore, we want to be ruled by God. So it all starts with the personal experience of the mercies of God. That's where all this starts. It starts with salvation. If you don't have that, don't bother proceeding to step 2. You have to have this salvation, the mercies of God. Then there is the ever-present awareness of those mercies of God. I know I'm saved. Know I am. There's the awareness of being saved. And that will result in, present your bodies a living sacrifice. And flowing from that is nonconformity to the world. You see, one flows from the other. You do not do step 2, be not conformed to the world, and then do step 1, present your body as a living sacrifice. That's not how it works. You present your body as a living sacrifice. Flowing out of that is be not conformed to the world. And flowing out of that is be ye transformed. So again, this is a life, the life we're called to live. And we could do a long series on the subject of worldliness.
But the life we're called to live is a life of non-conformity to the ways of this world. It includes a lot of activities. Again, it includes speech, it includes dress, but it goes much, much further than that. It includes our thoughts. It includes everything. We are not to be being conformed. We are to be being conformed to the image of Christ, Romans chapter 8. So we need to, because of the world we live in, and because of the powerful influence of the world, we can be being conformed and not even realize it until it's almost too late. So as soon as we detect, you know what, I think I'm being conformed to the world, we need to stop it right there. And the way to detect it a lot of times is our reactions. Do we justify it because that's what everybody else in the world does? Why, if you use the world as an argument for what you're doing, you might as well just put a sign on you and say, I am conformed to the world. And I've had people do that over and over, use the world as their argument for what they're doing. It's worldliness. God help us not to be conformed to the world. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us verse song.